chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may dab in the middle of it. Grass may dab in the middle. We are. Grass may dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to be covering some comments made on a number of different programs tonight. And we're going to start off with something that Barack Obama said during a town hall about jobs and so forth. It's only a 1 minute and a few second clip here. But anyway, I thought this would be interesting to see what Trump has done in comparison to what Trump has done out there in creating jobs. So listen to this little 1 minute clip here by our former President Barack Obama. And then we'll discuss it a few minutes here.
But for those folks who've lost their job right now because a plant went down to Mexico, you know, that isn't going to make you feel better. And so what we have to do is to make sure that folks are trained for the jobs that are coming in now, because some of those jobs of the past are just not going to come back. And when somebody says, like the person you just mentioned, who I'm not going to advertise for, that he's going to bring all these jobs back, well, how exactly are you going to do that? What are you going to do? There's no answer to it. He just says, well, I'm going to negotiate a better deal. Well, how exactly are you going to negotiate that? What magic wand do you have? And usually the answer is, he doesn't have an answer.
Well, that was Barack Obama talking about where will the jobs come from? Well, we've got to remember that our present president, okay, Donald J. Trump, is a bit of a wheeler dealer. He can go out there and create a lot, you know, of business. And so that's where the jobs came from. If someone that was more business-oriented than Barack Obama. Barack Obama was not business oriented, but Donald J. Trump is, and that's a big, big difference. He's created, since he's been in office, a little over a year and a half, millions of jobs, and he's bringing back industry, a lot more industry than Barack Obama is talking about in his speech to this group. But anyway, that is sort of insightful. And also, President Trump was out on the campaign trail, and we're going to play a clip here of Jim Acosta, and he's talking, reporting live from the media riser in this auditorium, and there's this crowd that comes in behind him that begins to heckle him. So we're going to listen to that in just a second, okay?
With the Mueller investigation's first trial now underway, President Trump and his lawyers seem to be cooking up a new defense slogan of their own. The president will hold, by the way, a campaign rally shortly down in Tampa, Florida. Let's go there. Our chief White House correspondent, Jim Acosta, is already on the scene for us. So, Jim, what's the latest?
Right. Well, President Trump is in Florida tonight to do some campaigning ahead of the midterm elections, but the president and his team are still busy trying to get their story straight on the Russia investigation. Mr. Trump is now echoing his lawyers, who have gone from saying there was no collusion during the 2016 election to insisting that collusion is not a crime after all.
Breezing past the cameras on his way to Florida, President Trump appears to have a new strategy for the Russia investigation. Ignore questions from reporters while spinning up a new defense where he's shielded from outside scrutiny. Tweeting collusion is not a crime. It's a notable leap from the president, who has repeatedly claimed there was no collusion with the Russians during the 2016 campaign.
There is no collusion. You know why? Because I don't speak to Russians.
There's been no collusion. There's been no crime. I can only say this. There was absolutely no collusion. Everybody knows it. Every committee, there's no collusion. There was no collusion with Russia other than by the Democrats.
The president is now amplifying what his outside lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, said Monday.
I'm not even know if that's a crime, colluding about Russians.
And another Trump attorney, Jay Sekulow, said today.
Well, that's not just technically correct. I mean, that's actually the law. Mm-hmm. But there's no violation of law, statute, rule, or regulation that we have seen after reviewing this case for a year. And I think Bob Mueller will come to the same conclusion.
Democrats aren't buying it.
I can't keep up with Rudy Giuliani's theories of defense, and they change almost by the hour. You know, collusion at one point never happened. At the next point, if it happened, it's not serious.
Weighed down by the Russia probe, the president is turning to issues popular with his base, threatening to shut down the government to make Congress pay for a border wall, insisting that's a very small price to pay, and tweeting, "I don't care what the political ramifications are." Even fellow Republicans are leery of a shutdown with the midterm elections fast approaching.
I kind of see it as posturing, to be honest with you. It's an irresponsible thing to do, I think.
Mr. Trump's border policy is coming under increasing scrutiny, with the administration official admitting to Congress that the president's practice of separating children from undocumented migrants amounts to child abuse.
There's no question that separation of children from parents entails significant potential for traumatic psychological injury to the child.
One of the president's fellow hardliners on immigration, Chief of Staff John Kelly, appears to be sticking around. Sources confirm the president has asked Kelly to remain at his post until 2020, though CNN has learned the chief of staff wanted the story leaked to tamp down on reports that he could be on his way out. Mr. Trump arrives in Florida with the upcoming elections on his mind, throwing his support behind GOP gubernatorial candidate Ron DeSantis.
Build the wall.
He reads stories.
Then Mr. Trump said, "You're fired."
DeSantis appears in a new ad teaching his children how to build their own wall in a show of big league flattery.
Big league. So good.
The White House closed out the month of July without holding a briefing for reporters today. That means the White House has held only three briefings for the press this month, and eight total since the end of May. There is no other way to describe what the White House is doing these days. Wolf, top officials, including the president, are hiding from the press. And, Wolf, just to give you a sense as to what's happening right now, you can hear there is a chorus of boos and other chants from this Trump crowd here in Tampa, Florida. They're saying things like CNN sucks, go home, and fake news. Wolf, obviously, all of those things are false. We're staying right here. We're going to do our job and report on this rally to all of our viewers here tonight, Wolf.
As you should. All right, Jim Acosta, we'll stay in very close touch with you. Thank you.
So that was Jim Acosta, and he's the one that's been popping off in the White House and getting corrected to somewhat. But he keeps on, you know, gouging away and insulting everyone in the White House and demanding this and demanding that. But you know what? He's out of favor, and he's reporting for CNN, and that's the one that that Trump is down on, and rightfully so, because CNN has really turned into a very fake news broadcasting network, that's for sure. But anyway, and why is that so? Why has that happened? Well, you know, they didn't expect President Trump to win. And so when he didn't win, then, you know, they were very, very upset about it. And so here's what Don Lemon says in talking about news and so forth in general. And see what you think he means by this. It's really confusion sometimes. But we need to listen to some of these broadcasters to get sort of a flavor of the angles that they're trying to pull on us. Okay? Listen to this a sec.
Donald Trump's presidency can be defined by lies, well over 2,000 of them so far. And those lies are coming fast and furious. Well, last week alone, President Trump made 54 false claims. The last 6 weeks are among Trump's most dishonest as president. That's according to the Toronto Star's Daniel Dale, who has taken on one of the toughest jobs in news, counting all the president's lies. And in the face of all that lying, all that dishonesty, the president took it to a new level this week.
Just remember, what you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening.
Well, this is a president who doesn't hesitate to tell you that what you see with your own eyes and hear with your own ears is not the truth. The sheer number of lies can be overwhelming. And the danger is that we'll become...
Well, you know, more people are beginning to believe the president about this false fake news and all this stuff. So really, I mean, his support has only gradually risen during some of these, you know what I mean, crises that have been produced by the press, especially by CNN. So really, the people are behind. He may not be factually correct all the time on some of his statements, but he's in the ballpark in most of the time because people perceive him as really caring about the country, trying to get up these tariffs and make that trade more fair. But also, he's trying to get us back to working in this country and get these jobs back. And people need the jobs, and there are more jobs created under him than Barack Obama could imagine, could ever have imagined. And anyway, that's really what we've got to look at here is that, you know, Trump is not perfect. You know, he's got this ego thing that we've got to deal with at times. And we've got to just look at that too. But anyway, but he's deep down in his heart, I think he has a great patriotic love for this country. Okay, coming up next is something I never thought I'd play on my network. Glenn Beck is talking about the Apollo Organization Alliance and so forth. And he's really getting into to Tides Foundation contributions and so forth. And what has happened is the Tides Foundation has been is a contributor to the far left. And anyway, we're going to play this and let Glenn Beck explain it to you. A second here, but I never thought I'd be playing a clip of his. He's not quite my cup of tea, but in this particular respect, when he talks about the Apollo Alliance and this Tides Foundation and so forth, he's right on top of it. So I ran across it today on the web, and I just have to play it for you. So here we go right now. Listen to Glenn Beck.
You know what we're uncovering here on this program is complex. And it takes a lot of our day just to figure out how to explain this to you. And it's complex by design. You know, that's the vast left-wing conspiracy. The Apollo Alliance combines environmental policy, the green movement, with labor and social justice. Why is that troubling? Maybe it's the guy behind the curtain making it all happen. He's a former black nationalist and self-professed communist. Here is Phil Kirpin. He is the director for policy for Americans for Prosperity. Phil, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Glenn. How are you?
Good. Tell me a little bit about Apollo and these. I have Acorn and the Black Farmers and the Sierra Club and Greenpeace and AFL-CIO and SEIU. Why are these three categories? How are they tied to Apollo?
Well, the Apollo Alliance is designed to bring together the elements of organized labor with the community organizers, with the green groups, the environmental groups, and to access all of the big foundation money that's been supportive of those causes in the past. So it's kind of Van Jones, who you mentioned, the self-described communist who's now green jobs czar, he described the Apollo Alliance mission as sort of a grand unified field theory for progressive left causes. It ties all these things
okay.
together.
And Apollo is named Apollo. Do you know why it's named Apollo?
Yeah, they really admire the Apollo mission, the moonshot mission, and they think that we need a similar centrally planned, organized, massive mobilization to reorder society and take control of energy and their various other objectives. So
they admire that.
They want to like moonshot.
Right, and I saw on their website, and I can't remember the exact quote, but it's something like massive and fast. They wanted something like the moonshot that could happen and just be launched quickly. Okay, so Van Jones, he is the self-proclaimed communist. He is one of the founding members of Apollo, right?
That's right, of the National Apollo, yeah.
Okay. And then we have Wade Rathke. Wade Rathke, who is the founder of Acorn, he was on the board of directors, if I'm not mistaken, of the institution that is funding and paying for Apollo, right?
Yeah, he was until this year on the board of the Tide Foundation and of the Tide Center, which are the parent organization that hosts the Apollo Alliance.
Okay, so Wade Rathke, Acorn, Tide Center, they decide that they're going to fund and create Apollo. One of the founders is the guy who went to jail. This is during the Rodney King thing. He went to jail, and he was just a black nationalist. He came out a communist, and he also then started looking into the Green Movement, and he's the guy who said, hey, if we tie labor and Acorn and the Greenpeace together, we've got a super powerful group, Apollo. Is it true Apollo helped design the stimulus package?
They did. They put out a draft stimulus bill last year in 2008. It included almost everything that ended up being in the final stimulus bill. Harry Reid has thanked them for helping design the final stimulus package that was enacted into law. And they brag on their website that they helped design this thing and push it through.
Okay. SEIU, this is the labor group, that they're the ones pushing through health care. This is Acorn / SEIU. Their vice president is on the board of directors of Apollo, correct?
Yeah, Gerlin Hudson, the vice president of the SEIU, is on the Apollo board of directors.
Okay. Can you tell me where John Podesta fits into all of this?
John Podesta is also on the Apollo board. He, of course, is also the president of the Center for American Progress, which sends out the daily marching orders, the talking points for the left side of the blogs and the online activists and those organizers out in the street, the Acorn and the SEIU folks. They get their daily talking points from that Center for American Progress email.
Okay. America, I'd just like to ask you, Barack Obama keeps trying to separate himself from all of these organizations. He's telling us, he's giving speeches, and he's telling, I'm one of you guys, I really am one of you. But then, these organizations, he'll always distance himself over and over and over again from the individuals. But let me ask you this, John Podesta, Van Jones, who is now his green job czar, an avowed communist, we've got the SEIU, who's in his office once a week talking about labor. They're the ones that were negotiating with all of the healthcare industry. He's in Obama's office all the time. Wade Rathke, former founder of Acorn. It all ties to the Tide Center, but who's really at the top of all of this? Who's the one that's trying to stay away from all of it and saying, I have nothing to do with it? Obama. But if you look at what Apollo... Social, see if these sound familiar, like maybe, I don't know, the way we're going to transform America. Social justice, the Green Movement, and labor unions. Maybe it's just me, Phil. Can you talk me out of the crazy tree here and saying this is exactly what Barack Obama stands for, and these are his soldiers?
Well, look, there are a lot of connections here that make it look like that's certainly the case. Of course, we've got John Holdren, the science czar, who's also tied up with a lot of these folks. We've got Jason Grummet, who was the chief advisor for energy on the Obama campaign, who's also on the board of John Holdren's group, the National Energy Commission, which is also tied in with these folks. I think that if you look at Obama's past, he was an organizer for Acorn. He was actually their chief national trainer. You look at all of the organizations that are actually doing the footwork to push through all the elements of the Obama agenda, and it's pretty clear that he's part and parcel of these radical movements. He really can't separate himself from them, in my view.
I don't know how you can put self-acclaimed communist as a czar and claim that you're not part of that. I don't know how you can surround yourself with radicals and say that you have nothing to do with that. This man is a radical.
He said some very, very important things. And when John Kerry married the Hines heir to the Hines fortune, she rededicated, you could say, or started dedicating a portion of her fortune to the Tides Foundation. And they are really, they're Soros-supported and Media Matters. They're all of the wrong organizations for this country. Each and every one of them it's just a collective thing. It's pushed to the left, to collective socialist communist left. That's what they're supporting with these contributions. And what they do also is they have involved a large contributions by many of the corporations. You wonder, why are the corporations giving to the Tides, who in turn redistributes that to some very leftist corporations? Because you got to go back to the Fabian Society in England. that the wealthy in the world finally woke up to the fact that we're going to create a world communistic system for the serfs and the peasants, like a fiefdom. You know, we're going to go back to the Middle Ages, and we're going to just work those people to death and discard them when we don't, and just feed them a bunch of drugs, a bunch of alcohol, put them to work in sweatshops, and then discard them, or, you know, reduce the population by a great percentage. And that's really what the plan, the so-called plan, is all about, is to take and reduce the population drastically, to induce a lot of death through pharmaceuticals and so forth, and medical iatrogenesis is the word. Now go out there and look at that, and just to my listening audience, go look that one up. Iatrogenesis. It's the definition of the word is the inducement of ill health or death through medical treatment. You find that word coming up in lawsuits against medical doctors a lot. But anyway, this is really what the Tides Foundation, to a certain degree, is about. And this is my opinion. And you can find white papers on the web. And you can go in and look at their, just, you know, who they contributed to. And it's a wide, it's a big list of leftists. So I'm not speaking out of turn without any proof whatsoever here. But anyway, that's really what his speech was about. He was doing it live on one of his television programs, so he was using charts and stuff, so it wouldn't quite come off on radio like it would on live television and so forth. But anyway, that's really what he was talking about in a nutshell. Coming up next is Alex Jones, followed by Joel Gilbert. Now, Alex is going to be talking about some very, very important points about the Fed and other things, too, about what the president has done earlier on in his first administration. But he also is going to talk about the Fed and how the Fed in the 70s started enacting laws through Congress, which keeps them from being audited. You know what I mean? The General Office of Accounting, I believe it is. So they've stayed away from this auditing. Now, what's important when you listen to this to keep in mind is that Ron Paul, he provided several times, movements and meetings and so forth. They were outside in front of the Fed in Houston. There are three that I attended. And it was in the Fed rallies. There were three rallies down there that I attended. And so Ron Paul had the really key to regulating, or at least beginning to audit the Fed under control. The Fed is privately owned, and that's the problem with it. And most of the Western central banks are privately owned, and this is the domination of the monopoly of money creation through these Federal Reserve systems, I mean central banking systems that are owned. So anyway, listen to Alex here, and then Joel Gilbert is going to talk some very, very interesting things about geopolitics too, followed. But I'll brief you on that a little bit before that begins. So listen to this, Alex, and also he brought this thing up about the Fed, which is right on top of it. And you won't hear this from the liberal, because the liberals are managed by the ultra capitalists up to a certain point, but they're told not to get into this Fed, even though that they had this Wall Street thing, you know, closed down Wall Street. Why didn't they have closed down the Fed? See, that's how they deflect these groups away from the real, real problem. See, why didn't these groups that went to Wall Street close down Wall Street go down and say close down the Fed instead? That's a real problem. Anyway, listen to this of Alex, and Alex has done a good job making great contributions to trying to get down to the truth on these matters. So here we go with Alex.
Today is the six-month anniversary of his inauguration and his announcement to kill the TPP, to renegotiate NAFTA and GATT, to kill the carbon tax, to control our borders, and he's delivered in a royal flush. But the headlines from CNN and the New York Times, the Washington Post, MSNBC, ABC, NBC, CBS is Trump doesn't get one piece of major legislation through. Trump's a failure. Trump's in shambles. Trump's under criminal investigation. And yes, he hasn't gotten any major legislation, meaning tax cuts or Obamacare repeal through, but a lot of other stuff that is actually major, has gotten through, massive regulations cut, and he's gotten so much done via the executive branch because they were unconstitutionally doing most of their globalist agenda through it. He was able to turn that back on them and kill it, and then watch the economy go from sputtering and faltering and stalling, roaring back.
So I regard the Federal Reserve as one of the most transparent central banks in the world.
That's a statement. What do you fear about the audit? Give me a real-time example.
It's about transparency. It's about knowing what your government does. The Constitution gives the power to Congress to mint and coin money. We sort of transferred that power to the Federal Reserve in 1913, but I think we ought to know what they're doing. The dollar's lost 96% of its purchasing power. What does that mean? Your prices have gone up every year. What was once worth a dollar, is now takes $24 to buy what was once worth a dollar.
And that's the result of policies made at the Federal Reserve.
Absolutely. They print up the money, but it's sort of a codependency, and this is a dirty little secret. You need to have a Federal Reserve if you're going to have a $20 trillion debt. Why? They buy your debt, but they buy your debt by printing up money. So you can't have an enormous debt if you don't have a Federal Reserve printing up the money.
No, give me an example, not a general swipe of review. Just say, take, for example, this. If somebody said this, it would be horrible. It would be end of the world for the Fed. Give me an example like that.
So I would envision a situation where the GAO, at the request of members of Congress, might come in and say at our meeting a week ago, they have taken the transcripts and reviewed what we said. They believe that the decision we made was the wrong one at that particular meeting. And I would say that's an extreme interference and politicization of our ability to make independent monetary policy.
It's true that the Government Accountability Office performs a limited financial audit of parts of the Federal Reserve, but this audit is perfunctory due to the limits placed on the GAO by Congress. The U.S. Code makes several critical exceptions to the Fed's audit protocol of its most crucial activities. Number one, GAO is prohibited from examining Fed transactions or agreements with foreign governments and foreign banks. Number two, GAO is prohibited from examining all Fed actions on monetary policy matters. Number three, GAO is prohibited from auditing transactions made at the discretion of the Federal Open Market Committee. And four, GAO cannot examine any discussion or communication among or between anyone who works at the Fed about any of the activities in the first three areas. When these restrictions were originally added to the in the 1970s, GAO themselves testified that they, quote, could not see how they could satisfactorily audit the Federal Reserve System without the authority to examine the largest single category of financial transactions and assets that it has, unquote.
And now, the Federal Reserve announces huge increases coming in the next few months to the previous increases of the amount of money you have to pay to borrow. And as the interest increases, it's a wet blanket trying to stop the American system that empires have been trying to stop for 242 years. This is an amazing time to be alive.
Now, see, what those points are very, very important because they've resisted an audit. We need to go in, and I believe Rand Paul is carrying the water on this one in the Senate, a bill to audit the Fed. We need to support Rand Paul. And he also stands up against the NSA surveillance of all the American citizens out here. So Rand Paul, son of Ron Paul, is standing up on some very, very important issues for us. And we need to start taking notice of those things. Okay, Joel Gilbert is coming up, and he's going to get into some very, very important things. He's the one, Joel Gilbert did the documentary on Obama's real father. And we think that that Frank Marshall Davis is Barack Obama's real father, which he was a sort of a publisher, printer in Honolulu. And anyway, got involved with Barack Obama's mother. And so this is where the birther thing comes in. We think The birth certificate that he finally provided to us was a forgery. I mean, it was proven a forgery. And so it was to hide, I think, we think, his Frank Marshall Davis real father connection. Otherwise, Frank Marshall Davis was an avid, rabid Marxist communist living in Honolulu. And if the public had known that overall, they probably wouldn't have elected Barack Obama to the Senate, much less the presidency. So anyway, that's what's coming up next is Joel Gilbert's geopolitical statements here. He makes some good points, too. Listen to it.
The Democrats, progressives have always relied on strife, strife between communities, on conflict. So they can say, well, let me solve the problem for you. If everybody's going to church and working and traditional values and people are happy, there's no justification for radical change. So they have to create chaos in order to justify that they can take power. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. Joel Gilbert, broadcasting from the People's Republic of California. Don't forget, in the Alex Jones store, Trump, the Art of the Insult, my new movie. You'll laugh for 95 minutes, and you'll learn a lot about Trump's branding and marketing techniques. You'll really enjoy this movie. Buy it from the InfoWars store. We'll be taking calls the rest of the way. Let's go to Judy in Florida. Judy, you're on the Alex Jones Show.
Hi, Mr. Gilbert. I just have two things. The first is I think whether anyone comes from a Christian perspective or if they're atheist, I think they should go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and read it in its entirety. It explains a lot of, I think, what is happening current day. But really what I wanted to get to was I think the tripwire for the deep state, George Soros, the left, of getting this war started that they want so badly, there's going to be a peaceful event that leftists will turn around and infiltrate and start a big fight. And someone from out of nowhere is going to come from behind the conservative Christian, the right crowd, and it's going to be an AR-15 or something like that. And there's going to be casualties.
Okay, all right. Thanks for the call. Let me comment. Look, the Democrats, progressives have always relied on strife, strife between communities, on conflict. So they can say, well, let me solve the problem for you. If everybody's going to church and working and traditional values and people are happy, there's no justification for radical change. So they have to create chaos in order to justify that they can take power. You mentioned that George Soros, of course, longtime agitator, funder, originally a Nazi collaborator, that people don't even know the deep history of this. He was one of the few Nazi collaborators not to be executed by the Soviets when he was captured. Lo and behold, he shows up in London a few years later selling stolen art that was taken by the Nazis from Jewish people. The connection of how he survived and how he got so rich and how he, you know, embarked on a campaign to destroy Western civilization, literally starting with trying to collapse the British pound in the 80s, I think has to be examined and tied back to his relationship with the Russians when they captured him. Don't forget, when he was 14, the Nazis gave him a choice. You can die or you can work for us. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was the choice he was given by the Russians, and that's why he's done everything he's done up to today. Let's go to Wesley in Oregon. Wesley, I'm sorry, yeah, you're in Oregon. Go ahead, Wesley.
Hello, Joel.
How are you doing?
Hello?
All right. Yes, sir, go ahead.
First thing I'd like to say is I've bought products from InfoWars. I have my Alpha Power sitting here. I have my Caveman and all of that. And I'm going to the rally on the 4th with my I Stand With Trump shirt. And I just bought $100 worth of Super Blue Crocs and whatnot. But anyway, thing I wanted to talk about was I cannot even see Donald Trump's recent tweet on his Twitter when I go directly to his Twitter. And I don't know if this is a new, if this is happening everywhere, but the only thing I can see from 2 days ago, the Russian hoax tweet. That is the only thing I can see anyway.
All right. Let me comment. Look, The Democrats, when they control the tools of state, when they control the IRS, the FBI, the DOJ, they use the tools of state to control thought, to control what people think, control what they say, control the agenda. Of course, control the elections. People forget 2012 was not a clean election. Obama used the IRS to break up the Tea Party movement so he could win re-election because his economy and his ideas weren't working. Same thing, repeat, 2016, he used the DOJ, FBI, CIA to try to defeat Trump, and in case he won, to frame him. So this is their playbook. Now that they're out of power, they're trying to use their connections and their sympathizers in industry, whether it's Twitter, Google, Amazon. I did a show earlier this year regarding Amazon that Amazon did not make money. They just barely broke even until a couple years ago. They paid Bezos from the CIA, gave a $600 million contract, no bid, illegal, to Bezos to design a website for the CIA, $600 million. He turned around a week later and bought the Washington Post for $250 million, which, of course, is a big sympathizer. And all of a sudden, he's the richest guy in the world. So don't think there's not a strong connection to the deep state, what I call the police state, and all these big industries, especially the tech industries. And Twitter's just another one of them. And they're going to use their tools to suppress the free speech, suppress opinion that differs with them. It's a very sick, evil plan to destroy free speech, to destroy the elements of the Constitution that make America great. And we're seeing this assault, instead of coming from the government, from Obama and his deep state departments, DOJ, it's coming from, now it's transferred to the tech industry. Let's go to Jim in Rhode Island. We got you on the Alex Jones Show. Jim, go ahead.
Yes, how you doing, Joe? I've got a quick question for you. Do you think the United States is an empire?
I think it's an empire. I think after World War II, the United States had been through two world wars in 25 years. There was a decision that was made that the United States needs to project its power around the world in order to prevent dragging itself into another world war. That meant stationing troops in Germany, facing down communist aggression in Southeast Asia, trying to combat and prevent regional wars and regional madmen from dragging America into a world war. So this is how I think that concept developed, that America felt we're better off stationing and preventing conflicts and fighting small conflicts than we are entering another world war. So that's how the idea developed that America would project its power around the world to maintain the peace. I think it can be thought of, in that way. I don't think it's an empire is someone that really projects their power in order to control and take over countries and manage their affairs. I think sometimes America has delved into that, but it's not the main goal is to maintain peace and security throughout the world for the benefit of the United States as well as our allies.
Well, that's about all the time that we have tonight for playing some of these clips and making statements and so forth about them. What I want to do is tell you a little bit, okay, about what I feel is really going on from behind the scenes in the area of conspiracy, okay? There was a program that was initiated about 5 years ago, a little less than 5 years ago, in England at Cambridge. And it was called Conspiracy and Democracy, okay? And they put one of these Sir So-and-Sos ahead of it, and they provided money, I think $5 million plus, to bring in and start gathering a slew, a roster of fellows to write on different subjects about conspiracy, okay? And you'll always hear a lot of people out there that people that delve into alternative news, you could say, like this station does, like this program does. Charlotte Littlefield Brown and I have been in some very controversial issues over the years. And so some people would label us conspiracy nuts and things like that. But what we've done, in fact, one of our colleagues over the years was Eric Samuelson. And he passed away in about 2015, June of 2015, down in Hidalgo County, down in the valley. But before he passed from us, he did and delved down into many, many important issues. And in delving down into there, I was a beneficiary of his great deep research. And he put a lot of what he did up on Bible Believers down in Australia. Okay? And I'll refer to that sometimes. But his keen intellectual curiosity and judgment was not, you know, even close. No one could even come close to him. And so, as a result, he coined the term conspiracy scholars, you know. And the people, like, one year up there in JFK, conference in Dallas, I interviewed six people. I brought that up, and then 12 people before that, a year before that. But anyway, anyone that has delved into this for any length of time, I believe they appreciate that new term, conspiracy scholarship. See, and let me tell you, there are many reasons that people are writing about conspiracy. And this British program over there that lasted 5 years was trying to make the point that conspiracy is a threat to democracy. Well, that's exactly, totally 180 degrees wrong. And I'll tell you why it's wrong. Is that you had a couple of tracks, you know what I mean, that developed in this world, okay? And they really got accelerated, you could say, from 1600 onward, okay? And one of the things that happened in England was the establishment of the East India Company, okay, in competition with this Dutch, you could say, competitor. See, the Dutch Indies, they had a trading company too out of the Netherlands. The British began to build bigger ships, faster ships, and they built a navy. They built a big, big navy, like gunboat, you know, diplomacy, you could say, and outstripped the Dutch. But in trading, you could say, opium into China, they established fortunes in England, money fortunes. And so that really transformed English politics, and it shifted it from formerly exclusively dominated by landowners, landlords, to something of a mix of entrepreneurs with all this money. There were business people, there were investors, and of course they began to own some land also. Okay? And then along came, in addition to that, the establishment of the corporation, which I believe one of the first corporations was established in Norway. But this began to shield individual fortunes from some of their business activities and established a stopgap type measure and limited liability so that their fortunes could not be taken over through lawsuits or, endangered. So that was another very, very important thing. But also the money power that began to be accumulated in the city of London began to be an almighty powerful tool. Okay? And there was established the really powers that are today. Okay? And so those people sitting in London, these money changers or whatever, money lenders, began really to be dominant money changers. But what they began to realize was that there were several possible uprisings in the English countryside and in some of the larger cities, and there were poor laws passed and these different things. You'll have to go back and read some of the history on this. But these wealthy people began to see, how can we handle this Karl Marx guy, because he's causing trouble, and revolutionaries are saying, for the people, we the people, and that America over there is establishing a separate dynamic business enterprise too, called we the people for sure. So how can we control this, you know? Well, they already had the money system under control, and so they came up with being able to provide the creation of an adversary, but it was a straw man adversary. And the straw man adversary was begun in the 1880s in England. And you could say it was the
Fabian Society at that time. And so the Fabian Society's goal was to bring socialism, communism to UK, see. But secretly, the money people were funding it to collect those people together and away from the power base, you could say, most of the time. But also to identify them, to keep them busy, and also to just run after a false dream, a utopian type of dream. See what I mean? Now, that has continued until today. And that's what this Tides thing is about in America, is where these large corporations are wealthy beyond imagination, bigger than most countries they're dealing in or situated or located in. So they've devised a means by which to create a funding of the far left, see. And they want to bring and just make everybody into peons and peasants and you know, into a fiefdom of sorts, you know, a serfs. They want to take us back to and make us into serfs, see. And that's really what's going on now that people can't see, and they're not awakening to that. So we're dealing now with a very, very powerful money group. They have no scruples. Their psychology falls out on the psychopathic, either sociopath to psychopathic personality types. But they also have great knowledge on how to manipulate and to mind wash and how to manage the humans that are us because of our problems that you could say that are attributed, you could attribute to our human nature, see. In other words, this battle, you know, goes on and on between the new agers about they're of the opinion that that our human nature is evolving to some higher God level. You know what I mean? That's when the Hindus bow to you with that little salute, they mean I'm bowing to the God in you, see, and to the divine in you, see. That's what that little salute does. So, and that's really what many people have come to believe from the New Age and from the Hindu and those kinds of systems of belief, see. But what it is, it's a guise more than anything else. It's just merely it's a system, you could say, of rule, okay, that has been devised to dominate people through creating just another false an ego supportive system. And what way I'm beginning to see it now is I say that it supports the false self. And then the false self is actually what you're in conversation with most of the time. And through that false self is you think that's who you really are. But in my opinion, that's not really your real core self. I still believe that the real core self is conscience based. And this false self is just out there doing its own thing, and it's being nurtured and supported and by the worldly system, see. In other words, if you want to get back to biblical terms, you could say the worldly things. See, I think the Bible says don't succumb to these worldly lusts and these enticements and so forth. And that's really what the society has evolved into, because you've had a continuation and accentuation through a synergistic system, and I define it as social synergy, see. And through this very synergistic collection and influences confluencing together, then we have a very, very binding system of ideas, and those collection of ideas give rise to a worldview, see. But the worldview is only a view that supports this false self, and the false self then guards us from being able to get released from that false self and back to the real core self, which I believe is the conscience self. You know, the real self, I believe, is conscience based. Okay, it has a foundation, and it rests on a bed of a foundation of a good conscience, because conscientious people are the ones that come through for you. See, they'll go out there and they'll do things and come through for you and get things done, see. While your other unreliable people, they can slough it off and make excuses, see. And your psychopaths and sociopaths fall into that. They're not responsible a lot of times, and they're unreliable. And they only do things that serve their own interest, period. And that's how you can tell them in many cases. But, I mean, it's like ego, narcissistic, you know, disorder and all these other things. They confluence into that, too. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening tonight, and I hope we covered enough things that will give rise to a greater knowing thyself, right? And then knowing the world out there. The world is a hustle, and it's hustling us left and right. And what we got to do is try to come out of this big, big game that we're being gamed, but we're being hustled. We're being street hustled, and we're being world hustled. Individual street hustlers and corporations and entities and big entities, churches and so forth, they world hustle us. So let's get street smart and let's get world smart and let's wake up from this mesmerized sleep state that has done nothing to benefit humankind but repeat history over and over of all war and no peace. Thank you. Good night. This was quite a mix here on this hour that we're rebroadcasting. I think it would be important because the Tides Foundation has been like an umbrella organization, and it's being revealed, you know, through these clips that I put out here in a very, very big way. I mean, what we have is we have a tremendous system, a big complex, and it's very, very humongous in size. And if you go into the, you know, Washington, D.C. sometimes, you see all these big buildings, you wonder how they fill these buildings, but they're not just right there. There's another 2,500 private corporations that have been recruited in with top secret clearances into doing all kinds of data research and spying on American citizens and innocent American citizens that have done nothing, see? So you've got a horrendous, a big, big beast that has been created, and it's not friendly to the average American. And that's what really is dangerous, is that we built this monstrosity, this humongous mechanism and machine. And it's like a big locomotive that's propelling down the rails, and you're trying to stand out there and stop a locomotive from running over you. And that's really what Trump has been up against, see. He's up against the same machine, the same humongous. Very, very, it's got teeth, too, that are very sharp, and they'll tear you to pieces. And that's what we all have to fear with this large this increase in government. And that liberal left has been supporting government, government, government. Tax and spend, tax and spend. And it's grown out of proportion. And it's out of proportion. It's humongous in size. It's become corrupt. They're plundering the treasury. We're spending money we don't even have anymore. I don't know how long that's going to last. My gosh, it's just, it's something you don't want to think about too much, about how long does this country have a viable, you know, life. We have Trump wanting to bring it back. This New World Order bunch, they want an American that you can put under your thumb with debt. So we become, to a degree, we become a debt prisoner, you know, debt, and we're in debt prison, see. You remember the debtors' prisons in England, where they would take you and put you in prison if you owed debt until your relatives or friends or someone else like that would pay the debt off, and then they would release you. So, but what we have today in America is we have trillions and trillions of dollars worth of debt and obligations in the future through all kinds of social welfare, social security, all kinds of different obligations that we have out into the future. And the only way to do it is to try to revive America and reindustrialize it like President Trump has been doing. And otherwise, what are the alternatives other than that, see? Then we have all these things where we have these fights that are becoming so partisan and so polarized between the left and the right. Like, you know, what's going on right now is the Kavanaugh see appointment and you know, approval by the Senate. That first they have all these committees that the Congress has created. I don't think anywhere in the Constitution it talks about having all these committees, but it talks about the rules that they might promulgate or something. Some language in the Constitution is pretty vague, and Congress has built upon these vague statements in the Constitution to build a humongous system of research, you know what I mean? And they have a research bureau, and then they have all these committees, and then they have subcommittees, see? And then if it doesn't get through the subcommittee, it doesn't come to the floor of Congress, see? It used to be where you'd present something on the floor of Congress and you'd vote for it or against it. Now it's gotten so big and humongous in size that we're not even able to do that anymore. So what are we doing in this country? We're blind and we're delusional about what we can do to save this country. I'm thinking. I was noting on that first hour earlier that I think if you go out here and you look at the crowds and you see families coming in and out of restaurants and doing other things, that people want to get back or stay. The traditional family hasn't gone out of vogue. All of this transgender and all this other stuff is on that liberal left, see. And that doesn't mean that the average person out here is that far removed from the traditional family and having their children, taking care of their children, even going to church still. The churches are in an emergent church movement, some of them. They're big churches, and they're more humanistic and man-centered than they are God-centered sometimes. But at least they're still out there, see. And they're building these big churches. And some of them have Super Sunday on the Super Bowl, you know. They get into all kinds of things like that. But that's just what, you know, the free market, you know, can open you up to. I mean, the problem with capitalism now in America is that we have a flavor of a version of crony capitalism. That means we have private ownership of the Fed and the central banks in the Western Europe and here, and all the Europe and here and so forth are all privately owned. We got the Bank of International Settlements and all. I mean, it's all private and it's hidden from us. So as a result, we're not able to see exactly what's going on, see, and not able to perceive. So we've got to, over the years, many people have been writing about the Federal Reserve, the Fed, and then Ron Paul, bless his soul, had been trying to audit the Fed. But there's resistance in Congress to do that. And they kill the bill. They're in the process of killing the bill as much as we are trying to push it through. They're out there killing it off, see? So, because they don't want that, see? So anyway, that's basically what we're up against. This rebroadcast of this second hour, it has Glenn Beck in there. He talks about a lot of very insightful things. We've got clips from Alex and other people. And it's just, I think it's worthwhile listening to this and just seeing what you think. So I want to thank everyone for listening tonight. And I want to God bless every one of you for doing something and trying to make a difference, see, out here. You've got to start doing stuff and praying a little bit and trying to help your fellow man. And with all that, we might make a difference out here. So thank you for listening, and good night.